Now on RTE Radio 1, it's over to Philip Boucher-Hayes, live from the RDS for this week's Countrywide.
Good morning and welcome to Dublin. Surely you mean the Dublin Horse Show, Philip? Well, yes, but no. We are at the Dublin Horse Show in the RDS, but in the Irish horse world, this event is simply called Dublin. They call this venue Dublin, and they call this first week in August Dublin. So this morning's programme is about horses, it's also about hopes and aspirations, it's also a bit of history, because this is the 150th horse show, an event which began in 1864 on the lawn in front of Leinster House before moving out here to Bald's Bridge. And there is already so much happening this morning, even before the doors have opened to the public. I have a co-presenter this morning who has been getting a flavour of what is underway. When you are as old and as ugly as I am, they like to give you a younger, more attractive co-presenter. That's the broadcasting cliche anyway. That job this morning falls to Dara McCullough.
Good morning, Philip. Thanks for that intro.
You're the pretty thing here, aren't you? This is maybe your first horse show. You're more of a spring show man.
Yeah, my earliest memories of the RDS were showing cattle here at my dad and my granddad right through the, well, I mean, I was a 70s child, so into the 80s I would have been here sweating over cows, fluffing up their tails, sleeping on the straw overnight. So exciting to spend overnight in the boxes minding the animals. It was such an adventure.
Which is exactly what an awful lot of riders have been doing here overnight. So give me your first impressions.
It's a bit like a movie set here this morning. That's the thought that struck me because, you know, just a few minutes ago, the bells were tolling from one of the wonderful Tudor-style buildings here that surround the rings. There's two rings just to our left here, ring one and ring two. They're both immaculate. The turf, it's like they had a spirit level out there measuring each blade of grass. The jumps are all, there's wonderful sculptures dotted around the rings. Everybody, there's a lot of tweed walking around this morning. Philip, even you surprised me this morning with your shirt and tie and a jacket.
I know, it's the one day of the year that I wear a tie.
And you know what? You're not the only one, because I've spoken to some of the, there's young and old here, some granddads and grannies and all family members. And one granddad was telling me that he can't wait to get out of this shagging tie. But it's part of the etiquette. There's a lot of history, a lot of etiquette surrounds an event like this.
But a lot of work going on and every equine discipline under the sun taking place here today. What have you seen on that front?
Yeah, a huge amount of work. So there's we arrived at 7 o'clock here this morning. We were late because there was already scores of ponies being warmed up there. So the class that is going to commence, it may have commenced already, is where there's under 12-year-olds riding ponies that are only, they must be less than 133 centimetres tall. For people in the horse world, this is all, you know, tell me something I don't know. But those kids are here. They have spent years, basically since they could walk, dreaming of this day. And they're up to high dough this morning. They've been out on their ponies since basically daybreak. And showing the ponies the rings, so there's a familiarisation process that happens, and nothing is left to chance. Of course, you know, they are animals and they are kids, so there's a lot of unpredictability about what could happen in the ring here today, but there's so many hopes and aspirations riding on what happens on these rings
here. The air is thick with dreams at the moment. So we're going to come back to Dara for an update on one particular class that we are interested in or focusing on this morning, because it's taking place in Ring 2 right beside us. Class 93, the Working Hunter Pony Starter Stakes. Four ponies under 133 centimetres and riders under 12. It's been underway for a few minutes now. 20 immaculately turned out animals and immaculately turned out children are going to jump a course of rustic fences, and the six pony and rider pairings of those 20 that the judges like the best will be called back in to ride another showpiece before the judges make their final decision. But as Dara was saying, just getting here is an immense achievement because these 20 riders have had to compete at qualifying events all around the country throughout the summer to be selected to enter this ring. We this morning are looking particularly closely at a very striking little coloured pony, tan and white, number 1028, the Cat Candy, owned by David Kelly, trained by Sarah Donoghue, ridden by 11-year-old Freya Kavanagh, because I visited them on Wednesday at their yard in Wexford to try and understand the superhuman amount of preparation that it takes to get to Dublin.
This is my own pony, Bella.
Hello, Bella. You're a bit big for Bella already, though, aren't you?
Yeah, but we're going to keep her next year because she got pneumonia.
In a world where some will spend many tens of thousands of euros on fully trained ponies, Freya and her granddad broke and trained her pony Bella themselves. But Bella is not ready to compete at Dublin this year.
This is the Candy. She's not mine.
Instead, Freya has been asked by the owners of the Cat Candy to compete her this season and help bring the little mare on.
Because they tried to qualify her last year in the SJI, but they didn't make it to the SJI, so they asked if I could try qualify for the Working Hunter, and I qualified for the Working Hunter.
It's very flattering, isn't it, that somebody has recognised that your riding is so good that if they give you this pony to bring to Dublin, you're going to do a good job.
Well, yeah, I hope it is.
Now pick your point and ask her for her canter.
Getting horse and rider to the stage where they're ready to go into an RDS arena takes many, many hours of work, much of which falls on the shoulders of Freya's mum, Sarah.
It's a lot of hard work. It
and
is.
And quite a bit of sacrifice as well.
Yes, there is. Yeah. It's near enough every evening is gone because she has to come ride the pony.
Why this? What do you and she get out of it that she wouldn't get out of playing camogie?
It's an obsession. It's a disease. It's in my blood. And she, from the time she could walk, that's all she's wanted to do.
Really?
So I can't tell you why or what it is. It's just this is all she wants to do, all she's ever wanted to do.
My goals that I set for myself was... This is when I was 9. I wanted to go to the RDS. Well, that's knocked off now. I wanted to go to badminton and like Burley and Poe and all them ones. But and then I don't think this is going to come true. But I wanted to be an Olympic rider for Ireland.
Well, you might not make LA, but you might make the one after that.
Maybe.
So, have you been fixated for the last 3 years on getting to Dublin?
Yeah.
On this Saturday morning?
Yes.
I cannot imagine how excited you are.
Oh my God, I nearly started crying when we found out that I qualified. I was so shocked. I was like, Mam, refresh that right now because I might not have qualified. I was like, I don't want to get my hopes up.
And canter or the circle.
On some level, this is kind of all your fault, isn't it?
Yeah.
You gave the bug to your daughter and she gave it to her daughter.
Yes.
Are you proud, though?
I am. I'm delighted that she's, at 11 years of age, has done what she's done.
Freya's granddad, Tom, stands outside the arena watching Freya put the cat through her paces.
I never bought a broken pony for any of them in my life. I always broke, trained them, yeah, ourselves, and the horses.
And it's not a hobby. It's a kind of a full-time job, isn't it?
I don't count it as a job because I love them. Only for them, through the pandemic, I'd have been in a mental hole. Because if I hadn't been able to get out and do it.
Because one of the few exceptions to being allowed out of your house was to have to go and feed livestock and bloodstock. Yeah,
that was it. And if it, only for that, I don't know where I'd have ended.
Yeah.
It was an awful time. And I lost a couple of good friends through it as well.
Bit of a privilege to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And now, just a few years on, to get to see Freya going to Dublin.
Yeah.
So to what extent has your focus and Freya's focus and your daughter's been on getting everything absolutely right for this first week of August?
Oh, my God. You have to do your very, very best to have everything right. It doesn't always happen. We could come out on tomorrow morning, she could be lame. That's the reality of it.
The golden rule of horses, if it can go wrong...
Oh, they can go wrong.
It will go wrong.
It will go wrong. It's the truth.
And just open that up there and we'll see what's in that and what we need to repack.
If you were to add them all up, how many individual items are there on the checklist?
50. That is literally just hairnet, bobbins, her show shirt, her show tie, her show jacket, Jods. That's all for, you know, everything for Freya's listed. Then we have everything for the pony, her saddle, her bridle, her saddle pad, studs, girth, buckets, feed, shampoo, sponge, all our washing stuff.
Because the pony stays in the RDS the night before and could roll in the stable and could be an awful mess when you turn up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yes, and then it will be bring her out, wash her again.
Try and stop the child from getting dirty while it cleans the pony.
Yeah, because she's in cream, cream jods, cream shirt, so she has to be immaculate as well.
It's a nightmare. It's not a hobby.
We also have to have her hair tied up and in a bun,
stress.
Regimented. Calm stress.
Like, I enjoyed the games, but, like, I prefer eventing, so if I had to pick one thing, eventing.
Specialising at the age of 11. This is the way to the Olympics, isn't it?
Yep, yeah, and then hopefully I win the Olympics too.
God, you're cutthroat, aren't you? There's two routes to competing at this higher level, though, for kids like her. One is to throw a huge amount of money at the problem, or the other is to throw a huge amount of time and hard work at it, which is what you're doing.
Yeah, we don't have the huge amount of money behind us. My dad has had them all my life, but we've put in the hard work. And for somebody to come and ask her to ride their pony just kind of proves the hard work is paying off.
Because she's a great little rider.
I am biased, but she is a good little rider.
She's a very good seat on that pony.
She does. She's,
you're so proud of her.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just written all over your face.
Yeah, no, we are. And her daddy is very proud as well. He's not horsey.
Your dad is made up as well.
Oh, yes. He's able to relive it all through her. So he doesn't miss anything she does. He goes to all of her events, all of her lessons. Like, everybody in the pony club that she's in knows Grandad Tom. He goes everywhere with her.
After the Olympics, I'll retire.
What happens if you're 22?
Well, then I'll keep going. Try to do the Olympics, like, again.
If you're going to dream, you may as well dream big. Just let me underline what the point that was being made there about if anything can go wrong in horses, it will go wrong. Yesterday, the Aga Khan Cup, the Nations Cup, before the Aga Khan Trophy was being competed for here, and one of the Dutch riders, after parading his horse through the arena at the beginning, left the arena. The horse was wearing new shoes. It slipped. He fell off. And the one part of his body that came in contact with the ground first was the part of his body that had broken 4 months earlier, his hip. And yet, somehow, Netherlands went on to win the competition. Ireland also finished on the podium in third place, continuing a run of unparalleled success for the Irish team. And the man behind that is the chef to keep, who is sitting opposite me now, Michael Blake. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Very well, Philip. And how are you this morning?
Excellent, excellent. That was well done yesterday. I know people's hopes and expectations are that we would win, but what is your rate of success at finishing on the podium in these Nation Cups events now?
I think like 78%.
Wow. So like four out of every five times we're being placed.
Yes, we've been This year we have been, might be quite as good, we might be a tiny percent less, but normally yes. Yesterday, you know, we were third. We had the same penalties, actually, as the team that were second in Germany, but they were slightly quicker. It's a new rule for the last couple of years. If you finish on the same penalties, the combined scores. So we did do the same.
This is a sport that is about centimetres and about tenths
of
a second.
Yeah, everything is fractions and times now.
We get back into the Aga Khan in 1 second. Let's just talk about the Dublin Horse Show and its history. You were nearly born here.
I was. I remember back in the...
Can't remember because you weren't born.
No, I remember being told my mother was here at the Spring Show. You spoke about the Spring Show earlier in 1962. And down at the end there where the old rider stand is, I forget the lady, she said, was on a horse, and the horse jumped out over the hedge and landed beside her.
Your heavily pregnant mother.
Yeah, she was in the old rider stand. I would have been, I suppose, 8 months in the womb at that stage.
And nearly arrived a little bit too crucially early. You're from Tumgrainy. Your aunt was the late Edna O'Brien. Terribly sorry about her recent passing. But you ended up, somehow or another, being neither a hurler nor the author of the next great Irish modern novel. How did you end up getting into show jumping?
So I suppose you could say I'm a failure in that regard. Well, I say I wasn't a hurler. I wasn't a veterinary surgeon like they wanted me to be. I just loved the show jumping. As I say, I did some hurling in St. Flannan's in the early 1970s, and I wasn't the worst, but my love was not the hurling, it was the horses.
Your dad was a show jumper.
Yeah, in the building here behind us, on the left, all the memorabilia photographs from the shows all through the years are there, and there's a photo of my dad on the wall winning the championship here in 1963, so I'm very proud of that. We actually, I suppose, maybe the only, or if not, there are very few families where three consecutive generations would have won in the main arena. So
that's
good tradition, okay. You know.
There's something in a theme already emerging in this morning's programme, because you would be another person who found a way to be successful in what is kind of seen as a rich person's sport by being a little bit clever and by working hard, even at that age.
Yeah, when I was 9 years old or a little before that, I asked my dad for a pony, and he didn't think I would be dedicated enough, so he said, you know, there's a cow needs milk in there. So I milked the cow for a year, and I got the calf and sold the calf, and that's how I got my first pony.
And how did you pay for the tack?
Well, I got £75 I got £75 at the time, 10 shillings for the calf. The pony was £55, the saddle was £20, and I paid 10 shillings for the hat. Then I asked him for a jodhpurs, and I said, you know, your grandfather needs the cattle fed over there. He's got a donkey and cart, pound a week. You'll get it done before the winter is over, and you won't need them before then. So he did relent to do a bit of hunting, and he got the local tailor to make me a pair of what he considered jodhpurs. But I was like a German army officer and didn't really want to wear those too often.
The big puffy breeches.
Yeah. So I had a pair of those, all right, but they weren't me. So I worked for the pound a week for 14 weeks, and I was £2 short, and my grandfather gave me the £2.
And that has, in some ways, translated into your management of this team. That approach to, you know, a team that doesn't receive a huge amount of state support has to be clever about how it tackles things like the Nations Cup. What's your approach?
Well, obviously, you have to target what you want, and luckily enough for me and for Ireland, our riders, the Nations Cup, and to wear that emblem and jump out for the flag, that's their number one thing. And they'll keep their horses for these classes. There are obviously big money classes where they can target, but in the main, most of our riders, we have a little bond, and they want to jump for their country, and this is the only thing that's important to them. Mm. And we try to reward the people that, you know, that consistently put out for the country. You can't cherry pick events and I'll go to this Nations Cup and that Nations Cup. We try to make a plan early in the year, and, you know, the people that are committed, we have to stick by those people.
Because you don't have just one Irish team. You have effectively, because you're competing on three continents, you have to have three different teams.
Yeah, we're very, very lucky. I think in 2022, we won a Nations Cup on four different continents, which is hard to do. And we used 39 riders. You know, some events are five-star, some are three-star. We used 29 on five-star. We used 39 overall. But I suppose what I've tried to do is develop as many combinations as I can, as obviously as you see yesterday, we had two quite young ones on the Nations Cup. But if you don't give those people their opportunities and their chances, you know, they won't come through.
You don't have depth and breadth.
Yeah, there are some countries that have stuck with the same few, and it's starting to tell now, but not us.
Because have you got more potential people amongst your picks or in your squad than many of your competitors?
I would say than anybody on earth.
Really?
Mm.
Okay.
I think that's widely recognised that, you know, if there were five-star teams to be put out on the same day, we could get it done.
Now, there would be many people who would have come to the Nations Cup yesterday who would have hoped or expected to see Ireland's four most senior riders, best riders and best horses, but you put two novices into that team. Now, they acquitted themselves pretty well yesterday by jumping the only clear rounds, but why are you going for that mix of young and old?
Because if we don't develop, as I previously said there, if you stick with the same few people all the time, not alone will you run out, but the youth will get disillusioned because there's no opportunity. Like, people now will say, if I have a horse that's good enough, it doesn't matter what my circumstances are. If my horse and my rider are good enough, the opportunity will arrive. And that's what I've tried to embody in my tenure.
Youth might get disillusioned, but some of the more senior riders might also get their noses out of joint with an approach like this, that they don't automatically get a pick.
Well, it's a different vibe now. You know, you're not just going to get on now because you're anybody. You're going to get on if you give results. You're going to get on if you show commitment. And that's how it is. We're just a different setup now. But then again, I think we have understanding of that. And, you know, lately I have engaged the services of Bob Rotella, who is the man, I suppose, he's credited with helping Rory win the Masters after 11 attempts. And, you know, I'm trying to get a different culture into our riders that we are Team Ireland. We're not four riders. We're Team Ireland. And it's how we conduct ourselves over the whole year. That's what matters.
Four riders and four horses. Tell me, what's your approach to this? Do you go for the best rider or the best horse?
Yeah, I suppose that's a question you'd be asked a lot, and it's a very, very good question. I suppose sometimes I might go for the rider a little bit because, you know, you can have the best horse, but it still has to be ridden very, very well. But, you know, that's why I try to give the youth a chance. Sometimes they're younger people with better horses, but they will get better if you give them opportunities.
So the horse won't get nervous walking into a big arena like that yesterday, but the rider might.
Yeah, I think so. Like, the horse doesn't really know where he is. Anyway, some horses are a little more. But, you know, we've ways of dealing with that. They wear earmuffs and whatsoever. But like, when you go into Dublin, it has to, like, when I used to ride in that arena myself with the stand all around, you'd almost be blown back by the crowd. And that and Aachen are the only arenas on earth where that happens.
What is it? 2028 for the LA Olympics. We're going to be back here in Dublin twice more before that. Mm. But how much, given, as you've pointed out, we're finishing on the podium four-fifths of the time, how much of your brain is occupied by Los Angeles?
A lot of my brain is occupied by Los Angeles because, you know, we really need a long-term plan for that, and we actually have one. We've already done a structure to carry us through to 2028, obviously.
Give us a glimpse of that.
So the first qualifier for the World Games is next year in Aachen, and obviously we are fully intent on getting qualified in Aachen. So we identified a certain amount of riders that we feel can get that done for us. They might not necessarily be... They might be the same riders, but not necessarily the same horses that you'd bring to LA because, you know, a horse peaks out after possibly 14, 15, but, you know, they're really in their prime 12, 13, and they might be the kind of horses we need to qualify. And then we'd be looking at horses that are 8, 9 years old now that would be our horses for LA. Mm-hmm. But the riders may be the same riders.
You're also keeping an eye on what's going on in Ring 2, this little working hunter class that our 11-year-old friend is riding in. That's important, isn't it?
That's where it starts. I mean, you know, you every acorn, every oak tree goes from an acorn. And, you know, if you don't take the first step, you won't get the last step. And little Freya there, you know, I was listening to her interview and she's amazing. Like, you know, it's a whole family affair from the granddad down and the little pony, Cat Candy, and Sarah, her mum, and Tom, her granddad. You know, they
That's just, where it starts.
They live it. You know, it's not just a thing for them. It's
Michael
their life.
Blake, thank you very much. Don't pick up the Hurlians litter just yet. Keep the eye on Lele 2028 and we'll talk to you between now and then. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
But thank you.
More from Dublin after these.
Email countrywide@rte.ie.
If you're liking the sound of what it is that you're hearing from the Dublin Horse Show, but you're not that mad about the idea of having to traipse all of the way to Bald's Bridge, this is a great time of year for shows in which there's plenty of horses to be seen. The legendary Tullamore Agriculture Show is on tomorrow, and then next Saturday, as John Hassett was in touch to remind us, the Cappamore Show is going to feature show jumping events and showing classes, including Irish drafts, cobs, hunter classes, plenty of interest there, and plenty more shows around the country. Oh, the Connemara Pony Show, August 19th. I should probably mention that as well. Now, ringside at Ring 2, watching the Cat Candy and Freya Kavanagh, Dara McCullough. What's happening, Dara?
Hiya, Philip. Yes, this class is well underway. We have had six clear rounds from six competitors. We're on competitor number 10 now, so three of the ponies pulled up. It's fairly even, Stevens. There's no particularly tricky jump. The number eight, it's a pretty hard turn into it. It's a bit more elaborate kind of a jump and a kind of a narrow little piece of birch on the top. Very easy to topple over, but most of the riders seem to be handling it ably. Bear in mind, none of the riders here are over 12 years of age, but they are fearless, focused and ferociously competitive. They're riding ponies worth up to €30,000, I'm told. So this is serious stuff. What it's likely to come down to, Philip, if so many clear rounds continue, is maybe the section where the riders have to dismount. It's called the in hand part, and also their way of going, in other words, how they handle that pony as it goes through its paces.
Okay, well, we'll be back after Freya has ridden her round to see how all of that is going. This, as we have been saying, is the 150th Dublin Horse Show. I want to introduce you next to someone who has been to nearly half of all of those horse shows. Mary McCann is something of a legend in sport horse circles, having bred some of the most successful show jumpers in the history of the sport and brought horses to Dublin pretty much every year since, is it 1956, Mary?
I rode in 1956.
You rode in 1956, but you were coming long before that.
A few years before that, yes.
The purpose of the horse show then and now, I suppose, was to sell horses. Yes, there's champagne and there's show jumping, but there's a lot of business done here too.
There is, but I think years ago there was more business done. Your whole year was connected into the final thing of getting to Dublin, and you had your young horses broken and riding well and got to the odd show like Assaye and those sort of shows, and then you came up to Dublin and you had all your English buyers in, or mostly English buyers.
And how many horses would you come up with?
Well, one year we came up with 28.
How many did you sell?
I can't remember that year, but you'd like to try and sell it, maybe a quarter. But they would have been seen by people from England, mostly from Great Britain, and then they would tell their friends and they would come back over afterwards again.
So all of this show jumping, all of this finery is really just a shop window for you to display your wares in.
It was then, but I think it's more now. It's, you know, there's a little bit more finesse about it now, if you like, and the kids with their ponies is a huge thing. When I first came to Dublin, there was one pony show. There was one pony class to jump.
Okay.
And all the heights, you're talking about the heights there this morning, from 12-2 to 14-2, they all jumped together. The 12-2 had to jump for the 14-2. And that was quite tricky.
Now we have multiple classes.
Multiple classes.
We have 17 or 1800 horses coming here in all of these different events. What's the biggest change as far as you're concerned?
Probably numbers. Now, you're talking about all these numbers of horses that came. But I can remember the four-year-old lightweight hunter class when there were 62 in it. And now I think probably the highest you get, maybe about 18, maybe.
So that's not a good picture then. That means that we're not breeding all those horses.
I don't think we are. I think the unfortunate thing is that the farmer that sort of had two and three mares and went down the road and covered his mare by a nice thoroughbred and then ended up breeding a very good horse, as I say, for the British market, That is nearly gone. It's got very professional now.
You live in Kill, just outside of Naas in County Kildare, 32 kilometres, I looked this up on the map, from the RDS. Back in the day, there were members of your household that hacked here, that got here on horseback.
They did. I have my husband David's auntie Mabel, who is still alive. She's 104, living at Hartwell. And she actually rode her horse, a little small horse, up from Kill.
Competed
against the army, she tells everybody, and then hacked home again. And she actually also hacked a Tullow show, which was even further, the next week.
Really?
Yeah.
Good Lord. That's quite
extraordinary. But we did that. I mean, I lived in Churchtown, and I can remember hunting to Clondalkin to hunt a pony in Clondalkin. You wouldn't see the hunt going through Clondalkin or Tallaght now. With my father on a bicycle behind me, and back home again.
All changed yep. Utterly, as they say. Now, you're not going to like me saying this, because I don't think that you like the whole idea of being a link to the past of the horse show, but allow me to redeem myself by saying that you also have a foot in the future of the industry, because the breeding operation that you run in Kill in Kildare has since the 1980s been using cutting edge science to try and take some of that guesswork out of getting the right mare in foal to the right stallion, up to and including cloning stallions to try and continue their bloodline. There are large liquid nitrogen-filled flasks everywhere, each containing straws of frozen semen. So how many straws in that tank? Okay.
About 1,200 in that one, maybe, yeah.
And
how many tanks do we have?
I was just going to say, how many tanks do you have, and how many of these stallions?
20.
Mary has in effect amassed a massive library of show jumper DNA, much of it from stallions who died long ago, but whose traits are still desirable and can be sold to the owner of the right mare.
This is where we process all our semen.
The main plank of the business at Hartwell Stud is the extraction and freezing of semen from stallions.
This is where we collect it.
Mary shows me around, followed closely by her two daughters, anxious to stop her from saying anything too outrageous.
And I think it's a little bit, somebody said to me once, a little bit like cooking. You can either cook or you can't cook. You can either freeze semen or you can't.
You would have thought it's pretty much a kind of one-size-fits-all process, no?
Horses need to be fit, well-fed, fit, well-exercised. In a good healthy state,
okay,
to produce good semen. It's the same as men. It's no good having.
You'll have to cut that out.
Where are we going?
Down to the second field there, and we have six mares and foals down there. So it's rather nice to see them. You get down here. Now that mare there with the white socks, do you see her there?
Yeah.
She is a full sister to two that went to Badminton, and she has a very good one this year. I'm hoping it's going to go a long way.
Though Mary has dedicated a long career to using science to promote the Irish sport horse, it's clear she feels that the glory days of Irish breeding dominance are long gone. Perhaps precisely because of what that science now allows.
I can remember years ago when we first started to ship semen around the country. And I went down to Cork to a show, and there was a fellow in front of me who had stallions in Cork, and he was talking to all his cronies at the ringside watching horses jump. And he said, and that Mary McCann up in Kildare, she's absolutely mad. She's putting semen in little containers, and she's sending them down and round the place on the bus. Now, how can you expect horses to go in foal when the semen's arriving on the bus? So I tapped him on the back and I said, you wait, man. And that's the only way you do it.
And you were right.
Mm.
But how is it that that hasn't given us a competitive edge, embracing that science?
I don't know that there's enough good mares in the country now. We are nearly all foreign. Are we nearly all foreign?
Yeah. Well, there's not just an looking Irish around. Stallion left.
No.
You obviously think about this an awful lot. Have you a remedy for the current situation? Have you an idea for how to get the Irish sport horse back on top?
No.
That's very dispiriting.
No.
Do better than that for me, please.
There isn't the genetics anymore, I don't think, to be able to bring it back to a place where it was in the 60s, 70s, 80s.
Am I being sentimental about this then,
yes,
Tammy?
We have
been sentimental for years about it.
But should I just be thinking that, you know, the next step forward in the evolution of the horse is to be taking sperm from Germany and an egg from England and breeding
that's
the
happening.
Horse?
That's in happening now all the time.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Is that what we should just accept as horse
think
breeding
we, I think
in
we
the
do,
modern
we,
age?
We do have to accept it. And you see, people don't realise that. You're talking about Irish bred horses now. They're only Irish bred half of them because they're born in Ireland.
In a corner stable at the top of the yard is the stallion Cruising Encore. He's a clone of Mary's most successful show jumper, Cruising, but also an illustration of how cutting edge science didn't cut corners to Irish breeding success.
I thought that people would want the genetics because Cruising breeds very, very good mares. Mm. And it didn't work that way. They didn't want it. They wanted us to see them competing. So and being another Cruising. And you weren't going to get another Cruising. It's the same with nearly all the horses that have been cloned. I mean, we have some very nice ones and they're doing very well. But they just haven't hit the top the way they should do, probably.
It'd be very easy to get all kind of nostalgic and misty-eyed about some glorious Irish sport horse past. Do you think things generally were actually better way back when than they are now?
I think they were far more fun. And you went to shows and you had fun, and now it's all very professional. Even the amateurs are professional now.
But the idea of the horse out the back that your child could go and have a little bit of fun with, that's an idea that seems to be kind of disappearing from the Irish landscape.
No, I think that's still there and the child can still go to the pony club and the pony clubs are great. These new arenas that have been built, you know, and people have got grants for and that sort of thing, once a week they'll have a little show and then maybe they'll have another show the next week and they'll gain their points and they'll have a final show. They're going much better. And I think COVID brought that on.
Well, now you're contradicting yourself. There is fun. There is crack to be had.
There is, yes, but not the crack that we used to have, I don't think.
Back here with me now. Are you still knocking a bit of fun out of it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I have to keep going.
You do. Mary McCann, it's a pleasure talking to you, and thank you very much for showing me operations down at Hartwell Stud. For quite a few years, the sport horse industry has been trying to help the racehorse industry with one of its knottiest problems. What becomes of retired racehorses? One possible answer to that question can be seen here in Ring 1 this afternoon. The racehorse to riding horse class. Retrained stars of National Hunt Racing competing in a showing class to see how successful their new owners have been at rewiring them to do something other than gallop faster than everyone else. In his former life, Mr. Adjudicator was trained by Willie Mullins, ridden variously by Ruby Walsh, Paul Townend and Rachel Blackmore, and ran at Cheltenham, at Leopardstown and at Galway, and he won a lot of races. But he has now been retrained by Áine Phelan in under a year to compete here, as Suzanne Campbell found out when she visited him in his new home in Feathered, County Tipperary.
This is Mr. Adjudicator.
Oh, he's lovely.
He was with Willie Mullins?
Yes, he was. He ran as a two-year-old with Joe Murphy here in Feathered, and my dad bought him for David and Anne Bobbitt and their family, and he moved to Willie's then as a three-year-old and went on to win the Tattersalls Juvenile Grade 1 hurdle at the Dublin Racing Festival.
Just after Christmas, the big Dublin Festival.
Yes, before Cheltenham.
Yeah.
Then he went on to Cheltenham and was second in the Triumph Hurdle.
Wow.
Yeah.
He retired out of racing when?
Last August.
Okay.
Coming up 12 months ago. So he's had a crash course this year in showing. He had the winter off and I brought him back in the spring. We've had a bit of fun since and he's learning loads and the change of pace from racing to showing and showing himself off.
And now, when you go into the showring in Dublin, what do you have to do in that class?
So we all arrive into the arena. We all have to listen to the judge. We walk, trot and canter on both reins, and then the judges will pull us in a line, and then we usually just have to strip them off, and the confirmation judge will look at them, and also the ride judge will ride them, and ride then them between how well they rode for the ride judge and the confirmation judge, then they place us.
So you're awarded on how the horse goes in the arena on the day, their confirmation, which is what their body shape is like,
made up of.
And then the ride judge, their experience of riding them. He's eye-catching, isn't he?
Yes, he is, and he's a great eye and ear in him, and he just has a presence about him.
Yeah, so he's pushing me here because... So there's winning going on because it's kind of dinner time. He knows that, does he?
Absolutely, and he knows there's feed outside a stable for him.
And he's thinking, why are they standing here talking when I can get my dinner? Now, we're giving him a carrot.
His favourite snack. He'd follow you around like a pup for a carrot.
People might think that a lot of thoroughbreds are the same, that they have the same characteristics. They're very fast. They have this beautiful, racy body built for speed. But they're all very different, are they?
Yes, I love thoroughbreds and I've been brought up with them since I was young. I had a thoroughbred in Pony Club and I've moved on to Mr. Adjudicator, and they're just two very different types. And what makes good thoroughbred to retrain is their attitude. If you have their attitude and they are willing to learn, they will take you to the moon. They're amazing. To overcome the transition from racing to showing or eventing or show jumping, it's very challenging for them, but if their attitude is willing to learn, well, then that's half the battle.
And so the Bobbitts really, but for them, you wouldn't have him because he's their horse and they've retired him here, is that right?
Yep, and it's an honour to have him and to be able to retrain him and show him another new lease of life.
I know agencies like Troel are trying to encourage owners to rehome them with people who might give them another riding career. It's not always easy to do that, but there are more owners doing it.
I think there is, not just Troela, but maybe the Irish racehorse trainers might need to get together and set up some sort of centre so that they can see the ones that can meet the criteria, say, of retraining, and then maybe send them to satellite yards that would be willing to take thoroughbreds. But I do think Troela are fantastic and they're giving thoroughbreds so much more opportunity to have a second life and showcase the best of what they can do.
So we're outside now. He's going to have a nibble of grass. And this is your dad's place.
Yes, so we're breeders and we have boarding facilities here. So we fold down mares and foals down here and break yearlings and prep them for sales.
You don't work in horses anymore?
I'm working as a radiographer in Clonmel.
Do they think it's weird that you're out riding racehorses and being a radiographer?
No, work don't mind it at all. They think it's great, so they do. This year, with the two horses that I have now, I feel like it's another full-time job.
Yeah. It's a lot of work, isn't it?
Absolutely. But you have to put the hard work in to get the rewards.
Have you ridden in Dublin before and are you nervous about it?
I'm slightly nervous but very excited about it. It is my first time in Dublin.
Wow.
So I couldn't think of a better class to go in because I love thoroughbreds and I've been brought up around them since I was young. So I couldn't think of a better class to do.
Well, wishing you the best of luck and Mr. Adjudicator and you to behave well for Anya. Okay? Good boy.
He's too busy eating grass.
He's so enjoying himself there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anya Phelan and Suzanne Campbell there with another glimpse about the amount of work that it takes to get into one of these arenas here at Dublin. And on farms and in equestrian centres and in pony clubs across the country, there's a folk memory that endures about the time that someone in the family or the pony club or the neighbourhood made it to Dublin. Janet Heeran is a regular contributor to Countrywide, as you'll know, where she writes about life as it unfolds on her husband's dairy farm and in the classroom where she teaches. And this week brings back to memory the great stories in her family of the glory of the Dublin Horse Show.
The RDS Horse Show gives us the excitement of the Aga Khan Cup, the Puissance and the Nations Cup. Add to that the smell of freshly polished tack. Top it off with colourful hats and you have an event which is perhaps inevitable in a country which is home to over 180,000 horses, ponies and donkeys. While few pull ploughs or transport creamery churns today, they remain part of the fabric of Ireland. With the hay saved and the straw in, the RDS is where the next generation of horse lovers takes the reins from its parents and grandparents. In my family, my mother and her pony, Sally Park Rover, jumped in a 14-2 competition in the RDS in 1954. Mom told the judge she was 12 years old to make the required age limit. Unfortunately, she didn't win that year. The following year, she really was 12. She competed again and won. Then, in 1977, my sister competed in a showing class on our neighbour's donkey, Dove. My sister remembers practising a lot for the competition, walking out and trotting back, up, down, heels in, toes out. No mean feat when you take a donkey's intransigence into account. My mom made a pair of jodhpurs for my sister, and with red ribbons tying her two plaits, she looked every inch a star on the day. The competition required the rider to be 7 years of age, which my sister had turned 2 days previously. But in the heady excitement of the occasion, she forgot her age, informing the judge she was only six. She and Dove came home with a highly commended rosette. My sister now manages a stud farm with more than 200 horses. Unfortunately, my equestrian career didn't progress beyond rides up the mountain and around the paddock. For RDS events, I was good for holding elastic bands for plaiting and for running back to the stables for brushes. I enjoyed collecting signatures from the greats like Eddie Macken and Paul Darragh. And of course, all competitors need supporters in the stands holding onto the picnic basket. And so, the RDS shows no sign of slowing down. It adapts, such as holding donkey displays rather than competitions. And some things remain the same, such as the trade stands, which sell everything from I Heart My Pony t-shirts to handmade leather boots. But most of all, the RDS is a space where love of all things equine is passed on to the next generation.
Janet Heeran, champion elastic band holder there. Now, we have been paying special attention all morning to Class 93 in Ring 2, the Working Hunter Pony Starter Stakes. Ringside for Countrywide is Dara McCullough. Where are we at, Dara?
Philip, we're just on the second last competitor now. We were, of course, had our fingers and toes crossed for Freya, who was out on the Cat Candy. She did a brilliant clear round, but she has just been nudged out of the top six. It's the top six that go forward for the final showpiece section. She's just been nudged out of that by 0.2 of a point. That's how tight things are. But her mother, Sarah, is here with me now. Sarah, I think you're very proud of her performance today.
Oh, absolutely. You couldn't ask for more. She's got herself here, and that's all you can ask for. Yeah. She done her clear round. That's all she wanted to do, because that's all she can control.
Yeah. And of course, when she was there in the top six, she was lying in sixth place there for a good few rounds, but just got nudged out of it. But there's always next year, isn't there?
There is, and the cat is actually not her pony, so she has her own pony at home, and she's hoping that she'll qualify her own pony next year.
Yeah, I mean, once the adrenaline dies down out of your system, you'll be exhausted, will you?
Absolutely. It's a long couple of days. The prep starts during the week, and yesterday was heavy going. We get the pony in here, and Freya rode in here last night to get herself used to the surroundings and stuff. So yeah, it's tiring. You don't get much sleep the night before.
If you went back home to Gorey last night and then back up, what time did the alarm clock go off this morning?
The alarm was off at 3:30 this morning.
You were probably awake even before it went off.
I don't think I slept last night, really? To be honest. The nerves just kind of take over, because all you want is them to be home safe. It doesn't matter where they come, if they can just come out of that ring safe and sound, that's all.
Granddad Tom was here as well. He was her groom, which meant that when she had to dismount and strip the pony of the saddle and all that, he was the man there calming her down, but she seemed very calm. Like, I watched her. She was perfectly erect and focused in that saddle before she literally strolled up to and broke into a canter before she took the first fence.
Yeah, absolutely. Frail, hold her nerves. She gets very nervous in the practice ring. Once she gets into the ring, she knows what she has to do, and she just does it.
Well, listen, well done. Congratulations on a brilliant performance here today by all the family and the cat Candy. Yeah. Philip, I'm afraid there's going to be no silverware going home to Corey this evening, but still an incredibly proud family returning back to base.
0.2 of a point to be pipped and pushed out of the places, out of the rosettes by that much is
heartbreaking.
Cruel, cruel stuff. Dara, thank you very much. Best to Freya, best to Sarah. That is all that we have time for, unfortunately, this morning. A most pleasurable morning so far at the RDS, where on the countrywide team, Patter Carney plaited mains, James Feeney applied the hoof oil, Mark McGrath cleaned tack, as did Amandine Passo Devine. But of course, the countrywide chef to keep is Eileen Herron. Sinead Mooney is on the way from the Dublin Horse Show 2025. Good morning and have a good weekend.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player.